This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Starting on that, well, decided to take it easy, shut the shiver. There was a bit of difficulty last night with the concept that I expressed of the role of a rov as expressed in his ability or in his duty to adapt pure halacha to pure law to the requirements of a given situation. The difficulties were A, how far does that latitude go? B, is it only a rov that can do that, not a person in his own right? And C, the general approach to such a concept of having to make such adaptions. And I want to discuss that a little bit more and amplify on it a little bit, which will also explain a difficulty psukim in the Sedra today. The study of halacha. Let's start off this way. To understand it, I'm going to distinguish between the roles of Rosh Yeshiva and Rov, as they have come to be distinguished in Jewish communities over the last 100 years or so. Although previously it wasn't distinguished, the Rosh Yeshiva of the town was usually the Avbezdin of the town. But for the sake of clarification, let's distinguish between these two roles, the role of the Rosh Yeshiva and the role of the Rov. And you must understand that there's nothing wrong with them being combined in the same man, but they are different functions. They are different professions in a sense. The Rosh Yeshiva's profession is acted out inside the Beis HaMedrash. The Rosh Yeshiva does not concern himself with the problems of real society as they exist outside of his Beis HaMedrash. He lives in a world, in a sense, we'll qualify it in a moment, in a sense of theoretical halacha, theoretical law. The Rav finds himself in the hurly-burly of action. The Rosh Yeshiva will give a shiur on what makes a chicken treif and what makes a chicken not treif, and there'll be pilpulim and machlokes and a rambam and a rivers and a shulchan aruch, and he'll give shiurim on it. But if you show him a chicken, he won't know which is the head and which is the tail of the chicken. The Rav, he knows what a chicken looks like because he gets the chickens on his table, and he's got to dirty his hands with the physical facts of a chicken in order to apply the halacha to the chicken. In fact, there's a story told about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik when he became a Rav after having been a Rosh Yeshiva for a long time, and somebody brought him the chicken, and there's a part of the chicken called the kukavan. I don't even know what it is in English. And he said, there's a shiloh of the kukavan. He says, is this the holy kukavan? It was the first time that he'd actually seen what it looked like. And those are the two different roles. Now, the Rosh Yeshiva involves himself in a process of learning and experiencing pure, unadulterated, ideal halacha. And when we talk about halacha, and I'm going to apply the term halacha to the Rosh Yeshiva's function, not to the Rav. When one talks about halacha, we're talking about an ideal system of living designed by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That's what the study of halacha is. That's what the whole Shas is about. That's what the Sifrei HaPoskim are about. When we talk about halacha, we're talking about a system of living, a model system of living, which is ideal, totally ideal, perfect, designed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. It is practicable, but not practical, if you understand the difference. And that is, in order to apply that ideal system, you would need an ideal situation. If there's no ideal situation, it's not easy at any given stage to apply the ideal system. Let's look at it a little bit further. It ties up with what I spoke about, I think it was last week, where the Rambam goes into his description of the Seder. Did we do that last week? Sorry? It was last week. The description of the Seder, step by step, and he comes with his korban, the korban comes on the table, and he gets so excited with it. What is the Rambam dealing with there? He's not dealing with a real Seder. Well, he is dealing with a real Seder, but he's dealing with a Rosh Hashiva. He's dealing in a world of ideal halacha. It's a world that the Ribbono Shel'olam designed. In the Ribbono Shel'olam's design of a Seder, there should be a korban Pesach on the table, and there should be a fifth question to the Manishtana, and there should be a bracha for eating the korban Pesach, and there should be all sorts of things which don't exist in our Seder. Why don't they exist in our Seder? Because there happens to have been a Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash happens to have been destroyed. Whose fault is that? Ours. So we have destroyed, starting right with Adam HaRishon, starting right with the sin of Adam, we have compromised the world in which we live to the extent that God's ideal system of halacha can no longer be applied in its entirety. And that's what created the profession of the Rav. Because if we were really living in an ideal situation, in other words, if the world was ideal, if the environment was ideal, you wouldn't need a Rav. The Rosh Hashiva could apply the halacha to the situation outside. The Rav's job is the job of applying an ideal system of halacha to a non-ideal situation. And that has to be done very, very carefully. And that is the speciality of the Rav. And as I said, it can be combined in one person. It's difficult, because they are two different disciplines. Yet a Rav who doesn't have the Rosh Hashiva side to him is no Rav. Because how can you apply the ideal model if you don't know the ideal model? But you can be a Rosh Yeshiva without being a Rav. The head is a bit in the clouds a little bit, but it can be. An example, I had in Shul on Rosh Hashanah. I'm busy learning the dinim of between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and what you must do if you insult a person, etc., etc. And I look up, and there are two people standing in front of me. They had an argument in Shul. What's the argument? The one man walked into shul with his 8-year-old daughter, and she wasn't dressed the way a young lady should be dressed in shul. And the other person took exception and said, please take your daughter out, this is a shul.
8 years old?
Yes. From 3 years old already, this. They didn't even start applying in stages, but certainly an 8-year-old girl should be dressed with sneers. What's the argument? Not that the other guy disagrees, but he's insulted. The first guy apologizes for insulting, he won't accept the apology. It's in shul on Rosh Hashanah. Who's right? The guy who said that the girl shouldn't be sitting like that in shul is right. But he's not right in Oxford shul. He's right if you're sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, in the Kernel, or here, or the Yeshiva College, he's right. If you're sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, if you're sitting in a situation which is the world of the Rosh Yeshiva, where you're dealing with God's ideal setup, you're right. If you're learning the dinim, how do you come dressed to shul on Shabbos or on Yom Tov or any other time? He's right. These are the dinim. This is halacha. This is the way God designed and wanted the world to be. But you're dealing with a situation which is not quite what it should be. So what resulted? The fellow got offended and walked out of shul. So on Rosh Hashanah, when you're standing to say tshuva, you've offended a person in public, which is a terribly serious avera. The guy has walked out of shul. Nice fellow, an ordinary Jew, really knew nothing about it, had never heard such a din before, that a little child should be dressed properly, is offended, walks out of shul, machalal Yom Tov as a result of it, doesn't hear droshes. We discussed this morning that a moment of tshuva can turn you from a rosha into a tzaddik. He walks out before the drosha, sometimes in the middle of a drosha, a person has a moment of tshuva, changes him from a rosha to a tzaddik. He doesn't get that opportunity. All because a guy applied the halacha. So what's wrong here? Wasn't a Rav who applied it. A Rav would never have done that. A Rav would understand that there is an ideal and there's another situation, and you have to decide. You're either going to lock yourself up in a Beis HaMedrash, where you can in fact live to a large extent your ideal. If you're going to be involved with Am Yisrael, if you're going to be involved with the people in general, then one has to use the art and skills of Rabbonis to apply the ideals in a way that you achieve the ideal. And that sometimes means compromising on the ideal. The same as the Rambam has his Seder, and it's not the Seder we have. You can't have the Rambam Seder today, although halachically you should, so to say. Okay. The world is such where you can't have that. So it's a halachic problem. What did you do in such a case like we had in Shul? It's a major halachic problem which requires the shikul dat, which requires the weighing up of a rov, and going back to last night, because A, he's sensitive to the issues, and B, because he has the siyata dishmaya that is needed. And so the correct thing would have been for the person concerned to come to the rov and say, you know, there's a young lady in shul who's not dressed as she should be, can we do anything about it? And then it's the rov's business to decide what to do, and the whole thing would never have happened. So what are we saying? You must compromise. So I want you to understand two things here. The first thing is that whereas, well, for the sake of definition and clarity, let me say that as I call the world of the ideal system halakha, we call the world of the application of that ideal system to reality psak. That's the area of psak, of paskening a shayla. So, and psak and halakha are two different areas. What one has to understand is that if you a psak is made, and it's a compromise, in the sense that it's not an actualization of the real halacha. For example, we had the two examples last night. The case where the community, where the rabbonim of the community wanted to basically excommunicate any boy who didn't have a bris, and Reb Chaim said that doesn't, that's against halacha. So you have a situation where the other rabbonim wanted to paskin. In other words, wanted to apply the ideal halacha in a non-ideal situation. The question would never have arisen if the world would be ideal. The question arises because the world is not ideal. Now you have to apply halacha in a particular way. Once that has been done, that's no compromise. That now becomes psak. What is compromised is the world is compromised in being in such a situation, but it's not halacha which is compromised. Let me give you another example. An individual who's just starting out in Torah, question of how much does he keep? Does he all of a sudden start keeping everything? Does he go step by step? So you say to the person, look, slowly, slowly, let's do this thing solidly. We start off with Shabbos, and we move on to Kashrus, and slowly we'll get the thing right. So it comes out in his initial stages, you might have told him, Shabbos and Kashrus, that's all, don't worry about anything else. Later on, maybe tefillin, whatever it is. But at the moment, let's look at now. You've told him Shabbos and Kashrus. That is, a rov, using his knowledge of the individual he's talking to, and the non-ideal situation, because really this person should have been raised in Torah, should have been brought up in Torah from a childhood. So the rov is now dealing with a situation which is already outside the ideal system, applies halacha in a way which appears to be a compromise. One has to know that's no compromise. That is the din. That then becomes halacha, and that has to be followed. Well, one mustn't feel that that's any compromise. There is an attempt to paint anything which is not halacha, anything which is not this ideal system. There is an attempt to paint that as a compromise. Chas v'sholem, that's not correct. What is correct is that the world is compromised. That a person who comes into Yiddishkeit at the age of 20 instead of at the age of naught, that's the compromise. That's where the compromise lies, but not in the application of halacha. And if one would say to the young man that we're talking about in the Oxford Shul, one would say, look, there's nothing we can do about this right now. We're going to lose more than we're going to gain. You better change your seat. That's a compromise. It's not. If the Rov comes to the conclusion that there's nothing you can do and that al pi halacha you're going to lose more than you're going to gain, the compromise is not the psak, that you can't interfere with this young girl. The compromise is that we're living in a situation where such problems arise, and that we can't do anything about those compromises. What is important, however, is not to compromise halacha. And this is critically important. When is it not a compromise? In other words, if I am keeping a lower standard, let's say I know that really, al pi halacha, whatever it is, I should be learning Torah 17 hours a day. I'm not on the level. I can't handle it. Can't make it. So I decide I will learn Torah 6 hours a day. Okay, that's okay. Let's say I go to a rov and he says, look here, you learn Torah 6 hours a day. That's what you've got to do. Is that a compromise? No. It's a psak. It only becomes a compromise if I then go around thinking that anybody who learns 7 hours a day is a fanatic. What have I done then? I've taken halacha, I've taken the ideal, and I've... distorted it to suit my own purposes, that's when it becomes compromising. In other words, if one says to a person, look, at your stage, all you're going to be keeping is Shabbos, Kashrus, that's it. Move later on. That's fine, as long as that person knows where he's going ultimately. And as long as that person knows that ideally he's got to be keeping Tefillin, and he's got to be keeping Taras HaMishpacha, and he's got to be keeping the laws of Tzniyus, and he's got to be keeping all the things. Ultimately, that's where he's going to, and he doesn't try and distort the halacha because of his low standard. There is no compromise at all. That's 100% in order. As long as he's following the hoirah of a rav, he's following the decisions and the guidance of a rav. In other words, he's not making up his own mind. He's following a psak, and he doesn't regard anybody who keeps more than he does as being a fanatic. That's fine. And that, in fact, is one of the problems with any Torah setup that involves political ideology. That's one of the big old arguments between Mizrahi, the Bnei Akiva parent body, and the Torah society of that day and of today. The whole question of to what extent is your political ideology penetrating into the area of absolute halacha. If you want to apply halacha in a particular way, that's fine. If you want to say this is the way it really is, but today, because we've got to be makariv and we've got to relate to the government in Israel, we've got to do this and that and the other, we've got to apply it in such and such a way, provided that's done al pi halacha, that's 100% in order. But the fear is that one's political ideologies begin to taint the Beis HaMidrash, that you haul them into the Beis HaMidrash and it starts affecting your view of the ideal system. That's what one has to be careful of, not only in the sense of political ideologies, but any hang-ups. When one comes into a Beis HaMidrash, you've got to leave your hang-ups outside. That's the difference between a Beis HaMidrash and a shul, or between a Beis HaMidrash and any other place in the world. Beis HaMidrash is a place where you look at things the way they really should be, irrespective of your own weaknesses, and irrespective of everybody else's weaknesses. You're studying the ideal. You're studying the way that Ribbono Shel'olam would really like it. And you can't allow your weaknesses to get involved, or your hang-ups or predispositions or anything like that cannot become involved. Before I come to the Sedra, just one other point, and that is that this is the key, really, to our love of Olam Hazeh. We love this world. We love Olam Hazeh, and I'm going to demonstrate to you in a moment the extent to which we love Olam Hazeh, to which we love this world, and we have no cravings to get to Olam Haba. That's why we steer clear of it, no mention of it in the Torah, and we get the cold shivers when anybody else talks about Olam Haba. We like to be right here, not in Olam Haba, not in the world to come. Because this world offers us the fascinating opportunity of doing two things. Three things. Number one, learning the ideal, right, which you can't do in Olam Haba. So what you've learned, you've got. But here, it enables us to join the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Beis HaMidrash. You join God in the dynamic creation of Torah concepts. Right? That's the first thing. That's why we've got the principle of Kol Adam Din Emet La'Amito. If a person comes to a correct conclusion in Torah, Na'aseh Shutaf La'Kadosh Baruch Hu Bevriyas HaOlam, he becomes a partner with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the creation of the world. You're working together with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Beis HaMidrash. You come into a Beis HaMidrash and you leave all the imperfections of society out behind you, and you relate to the world the way the Ribbono Shel Olam would really like it to be. That's the first fascinating opportunity that one has in Olam Hazeh, in this world. The second opportunity is to actualize it. That's the word you use, isn't it? That's a very good word. To actualize the halacha. That is, to then go out of the Beit HaMidrash and take this ideal and put it into practice. That's an incredible thing. That means you sit in your Beit HaMidrash and you learn the dinim of tzitzis. You learn what kinds of tzitzis and what tcheles is and what size they must be, and you go into the whole thing and the philosophy and why the Ribbono Shel Olam wants tzitzis. The whole business you work out, and you now understand the ideal of tzitzis. Then it suddenly strikes you. It's not beyond you. You don't have to wait for Mashiach to do tzitzis. It's a possibility to take all your learning and with one action to put it into practice. And that's an incredible thrill. To take all this theory that one feels so deeply and intimately about and put it into practice, that's the most wonderful thing that one can do. And that you can do only in Olam Hazeh. And that's why the Vilna Gaon cried when he was dying. I think I told you last week. He held his tzitzis and he says, in Olam Hazeh, for a couple of pennies, look what you can buy. Buy a pair of tzitzis which enables you to actualize pages and pages of Gemara and Rishonim and Poskim and everything. just this one little purchase enables you to put all that into practice and to make it real. That you can't do on Olam Haba. In the world to come, you can learn and you conceptualize and all sorts of things. You can't do anything about it. You can't put it into practice. What about those things we can't put into practice ourselves, as we discussed last week? So one obviously has to go as far as one can. And then there's still things which one can't do. There are dinim about a melech that apply only to a king. There are dinim that apply to a kohen. There are dinim that apply only when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt and the Mashiach will be here. At least it enables us also to work towards the actualization of these halachas at some future date. You remember I gave you the example last week of planting a tree which will only yield a very exotic flower in 200 years' time. And you work for the tree and you nurture the tree and you get it. It doesn't bother you that it's going to come in 200 years' time. You're working on this because ultimately that flower is going to come. And so too, we work in our Beis HaMedrash and we learn dealing about the Beis HaMikdash and about korbanos, sacrifices, and the Kohen, and the Kohen Godel, and the Mashiach, and the Melech, because we want to know all this and be ready. It could happen any day, and even if it doesn't happen any day, it will happen in the future, and we're relating to something which is practicable, although it might not be immediately practical. And that one can only do in Olam Hazeh, that one can only do on this world. Once you leave this world, there's no chance of ever putting it into practice. That's the end of it. Now we'll understand two contradictory psukim in this morning's Sedra. The first one is in chapter Lamed Aleph, verse Zion. Vayikra Moshe liYoshua vayomer alav leinei chol Yisrael. Moshe calls Yoshua and says to him in front of all of the people of Israel, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous, ki ata tavo et ha'am hazeh la'aretz. And this literally translated means, because you will come the people to the land which God has sworn them, etc., etc. So Unkelus translates it slightly differently to make it make sense, and he says, "Arei at teul im amahadein, you will come with the people to the land of Israel." Right? A little bit further on, in verse Kaf Gimel, the same chapter, it says, "And God commanded Yoshua ben Nun and said to him, be strong and courageous, because you will bring the people of Israel to the land which I have sworn to you." And Unkelus translates it that way. And the Gemara picks up, and Rashi brings the Gemara picks up in Sanhedrin Daf Ches, two different approaches in what Moshe said to Yoshua and what God said to Yoshua. Moshe said, "Ata tavo, you'll come with them to the land of Israel," and God says, "You'll lead them to the land of Israel." What's the difference? Says the Gemara, ask the Gemara, Ki atat avi, it says in one place you will bring, and in another place it says you will lead. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan tells us the background to the story. Amar lo Moshe li Yoshua, Moshe said to Yoshua, Atav hazkenim shibadori mahem, you together with the elders of that generation will bring the people into the land of Israel. Don't think you'll do this on your own. Don't think you can do this on your own. Consult with the elders, consult with the Sanhedrin, do everything together with them, and together you'll manage to bring the people. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, I beg to differ. Tol makel v'hachal kod kodam, you, Yeshua, take a stick and hit them on their skulls. Davar echad l'dor v'en shnei dvarim l'dor. There can be only one leader for a community, not two leaders for a community. And no democracy over here. You'll jolly well take a stick if they don't go. You know, consulting with people. You'll get them into the land of Israel by force if necessary. And it's your job and you're responsible. And that's the end of the story. Don't think you can share the responsibility with others. What's going on? God and Moshe having an argument here. Moshe says, consult, do it democratically. And God says, forget about democracy, do it as a dictator. We know that Moshe and the Mephoshim have a lot of difficulty with this Gemara, and they say, after all, Moshe talked with Nevuah. Moshe was a prophet. He talked in the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So when he said to Yoshua, "Ata tavo, consult the elders and do it together with them," it wasn't his own theory. He was talking in the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And God comes along a few sentences later and contradicts Moshe. What's going on? But one can understand it very well. If the world was as it should be, there would be no difficulty in Yoshua leading the people in alone. But Moshe said, I've had experience. I was also appointed to do it alone. To take them out of Egypt, I was told to do it alone. But if you follow the history of the last 40 years, Yoshua, you'll remember, I couldn't do it on my own. And I had to appeal to the Ribbono Shel Olam to give me assistance. And the Ribbono Shel Olam reluctantly agreed that I could take assistance to do the job. So I'm telling you, Yeshua, don't try and do it on your own. You'll kill yourself in the process. The Ribbono Shel Olam comes along and says, Yeshua, Moshe is right. But it's a compromise if you think that's how it should be. You should know that theoretically you are responsible. The way I want it is that you should do it yourself. Even if it means taking a stick and beating them into the land of Israel. That's how I would prefer it. Rather that way than that you should consult with other people and you should find that the community has more than one leader, because that's destructive. That I don't want. And if you find that the only way that you can do it is to consult with the elders, okay, but don't forget what I've told you. The din is, the halacha is, that you've got to do it yourself. The psak, Moshe has given you a psak, Moshe is the rov. Moshe has given you a psak, which is not my psak, says God, but he's entitled to do that. He's paskin that you must consult. That's not the way I want it, ideally. That explains also the Gemara I brought last week about the machlokis that was there. Remember with the walls caving in and the river stopping, and eventually the Ribbono Shel Olam says himself, that I think it was Rabbi Yeshua who it was, is right, is correct, and they told the Ribbono Shel Olam to keep out of it. Because sure, in halacha maybe Rabbi Yeshua was correct, but in psak, when it came to applying the halacha to the real situation, we have a din acharei rabim lahatot, we've got to follow the majority. And so we see over here the concept, A, that the rov has to apply the ideal to a non-ideal situation, ensuring that the result is as close to ideal as possible, even if sometimes the actual application is not ideal, because to apply an ideal to a non-ideal situation is destructive. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, when doing so, the Rav has to be very careful to see that he and the situation know that that's not the ideal. That's not the way it should really be. It's a concession, because there's nothing else we can do. The world's not in a good state, and one has to do it. But one shouldn't think that it's an absolute and it's an ideal, and that's the way it really is. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam steps in and says, you're sure, maybe Moshe is right the way he's advised you to handle the situation, but don't forget, that's not the way I really want it. Just to end off, I want to show you, I said I would show you the extent to which we love life. The extent to which the Olam Hazeh is important to us. The extent to which we appreciate the opportunity of being able to take God's ideal system and put it into practice as far as we can, at least. At least do whatever we can, and there's plenty we can do. There's a lot that has to wait till after Mashiach, but there's plenty we can do. Every minute of our lives, there are opportunities to put our learning into practice and to put the ideal which we've developed and the whole concept of the Ribbono Shel Olam's world that we have, to put that into practice, that exists every moment of the day. The thing that I want to tell you is how Moshe spent his last hours. Now, we read in the Torah, Moshe died and Yeshua took over, end of story, carry on. It wasn't like that. The Medrash tells us what those last hours were like, and it's quite pathetic. Moshe is 120 years old. He's old. He's had enough. He's had 40 years when he was thinking of retiring at 80. He started this new job of leading a couple of million people. And he's had it for 40 years. And we've read, we've been over the last 6 months, we've seen the tzoras he had and the trouble that he had to get them to toe the line and to keep them in line. Comes the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, what I'm telling you now comes from the Midrashim. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, your time is up. What did Moshe do? One would think, anyone else would say, okay, Ribbono Shel Olam, thank you, it was a good life, thank you for telling me my time is up. And he does his tshuva and does his vidur and goes to sleep. No. Moshe goes outside, he does what Choni Hamagal did many years later. He draws a ring outside in the sand, sits down in the ring and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm not moving out of this ring until you let me live. And he started praying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Medrash says that the world started trembling. They couldn't take the power, the world couldn't take, the physical universe couldn't take the power of Moshe's prayer. And the Ribbono Shel Olam started getting upset, and he said, close all the doors before Moshe's prayer. I don't want them to come anywhere near me. I can't take it. And they closed the door, and Moshe carried on praying. And the Medrash says that his prayers penetrated the mechitzas, it penetrated the walls that were set up like a sword. It just came right through, and the Ribbono Shel Olam was still hearing these prayers of Moshe. And he sent his angels down to put barricades up and to lock the doors and to make quite sure that no prayer could get anywhere near the Ribbono Shel Olam, because he couldn't take it. What were his prayers? The Medrash tells us some of them. First one is, he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you call yourself a just God, that you pay rewards, people get what they deserve. Is this what I deserve? It's a man 120 already. claiming against the Ribbono Shel'olam, why let me die now? I'm at the prime of my life, I want to live on. Is this what you call after 40 years of working for you, and after 40 years of taking the trouble of leading this miserable people as I've had to, with all the trouble that they've given me and they've given you, and now you're going to kill me at 120 years old? Ribbono Shel'olam answers to him, Gezeira Milchama, I'm sorry Moshe, you're right, but tough luck, that's just how it is. So he tries something else. He says, Ribbono Shel'olam, let me go into Eretz Yisrael dead, like Yosef. So I'll be buried out here in a mountain that nobody will ever know where I'm buried. I'll die, okay, I'll take it, I'll die. But let my body at least go into Eretz Yisrael. Says Ribbono Shel'olam, no. Yosef, when he was in Egypt, was proud of being a Jew. When you were in Egypt, somebody called you an Egyptian and you didn't protest. You have no right to go into Israel, even dead. So then he says, and listen to this, is Moshe Rabbeinu, king of Israel. He says, Ribbono Shel'olam, okay, I won't go into Eretz Yisrael. I'll stay here in the desert like a wild animal. I'll go around the dustbins, I'll pick up, I'll dig out, I'll eat berries. Nobody will ever know of me, nobody will ever hear of me. I'll run around the desert like a wild animal. Let the people go in, and I'll be a gypsy. Moshe Rabbeinu. Can you imagine that? He's prepared to do that. That's how much he loves life. He's prepared to remain in the desert. A man of 120. And he's prepared to live like an animal. Just so that he should have another few years of life, or he shouldn't die. Ribbono Shel'olam says, Rav Lachim, you've had enough. I'll live in this world during the daytime, and you can take my neshama at night time. Right? Something like when we fall asleep, in any case, the neshama goes to the Ribbono Shel'olam in a way, just take it more. I can die every night, and I'll be reborn every morning. At least I'll have the days in this world. Look how much he loves Olam Hazeh. He's not prepared to leave it. Moshe says, the Ribbono Shel'olam says, forget it. Rav Lecha, you've had enough, Moshe. And he starts getting panicky. And he starts running around. He goes to the heavens and the earth. He says, be mispalel for me. Ask the Ribbono Shel'olam to let me stay. Heavens and the earth say, we've got enough to ask the Ribbono Shel'olam about. We've got to worry about ourselves. We've got no time to ask for you. And he goes to the mazolos, the kochavim. He goes to the stars and the constellations. And he goes to all the different aspects of the world, asking each one, pray to the Ribbono Shel'olam, help me, do something for me. Imagine that Moshe, king of Israel, the great of the great, running around on his hands and knees to whatever he can find to grab hold of to ask him to help him in his tefillah. And the irony, the worst part of it, is finally he turns to the sea. He says, sea, you and I have had a close relationship for a long time. You asked me, ask the Ribbono Shel'olam to let me stay longer. And the sea says, Moshe, what's happened? A couple of years ago, you stood at the side of the sea, and you just lifted up your hand, and I jolly well had to split just because you told me to. Well, where's all your power gone? You used to have the Ribbono Shel'olam next to you. Where's he gone? And Moshe breaks down and he says, oh, he says, if only I could be back there 40 years ago. When I used to be a king, when whatever I said was done, and I lifted up my hand, and you jolly well split, and now you're mocking me. Then he finds an angel eventually. He says to the angel, help me. The angel says, there's just no point, Moshe, you're wasting your time. I've heard it, it's already decided that you're going to die today, there's just nothing you can do about it. And Moshe puts his hand in his face, and he bursts into tears, and he cries. So when Banishman comes to Moshe, he says, listen, Moshe, okay, so this is all in the last day of his life. Can you imagine? All this, in today's subject, it all happened. He says, Moshe, you know, I made two promises. One is I was going to destroy the people of Israel, and one is that you weren't going to come into the land of Israel. You asked me to withdraw from the first one. I did. Do you want me to switch now? He says, one of the two. He says, I'm not prepared that both my promises should be voided and nullified. One of them I've got to keep. You can choose. If you want to go into Israel, I must destroy the people. So there wasn't even a moment's hesitation from Moshe. He says, I would rather die and let 1,000 Moshes die, but don't touch the tip of the nail of one Jew. Ahavas Yisrael. Look how this man is craving to live a little bit longer, but not at the expense of the tip of the nail of one Jew. And look what the Jews have done to him. Look what a time they've given him. That doesn't matter. Not the tip of a nail, you can't say that, because Moshe, don't you dare touch them. Leave every Jew alone. I would rather die 1,000 times. So then the Ribbono Shel'olam tries to comfort Moshe. He says, Moshe, you know, it's just the way the world is. Each generation needs their own leaders. You've had your turn. You've served me wonderfully and faithfully. The generation needs a new leader. We need Yeshua. And Moshe's eyes lit up. So you mean to say that's the problem? We've got to get rid of me because Yeshua has got to lead. I'll become Yeshua's Talmud. Alone with Yeshua, let him be the leader, I don't mind. This Moshe is going to sit at his talented feet and learn Torah. And the Baruch Hashem says a wonderful thing because he knows Moshe. He says, okay Moshe, if you're prepared to do that, you got it. Moshe is elated. Just imagine, he's won. He's got another lease on life. He's going to live. All he's got to do is be Yeshua's talented. I need the pleasure. So he goes into Yeshua's study. He finds Yeshua standing and learning. So Yeshua sitting and learning. In those days, and until very much later, the Rav used to sit and the Talmidim used to stand. It's actually very clever because otherwise there's no chance of the Rav falling asleep. The chance of the Talmidim fall asleep. So they used to do it the other way around. So he finds Yeshua sitting at his desk and learning, and he gets into a corner, Moshe, and he stands and he waits. Waits for Yeshua to finish. Then he's thrilled. He didn't know he was living again. People start looking for Moshe. They don't know that this is all gone on. Where's Moshe? Where's Moshe? He's going to Yeshua's study. Now they all come to Yeshua's study. I see them. Yeshua's sitting and Moshe's standing. And they scream at Yeshua. They're about to kill him. Yeshua, what are you doing? Yeshua hadn't noticed Moshe standing there. Yeshua looks up and he sees Moshe standing. He says, oh, he says, Rebbe, Rebbe, Avi, Avi is my Rebbe, my father. What's going on here? So, you know, it's come and sit here and let me stand, whatever it is. How can this be? And the people started chanting, like Lahavdu with We Want Pick, Lahavdu with Lefavdolas. They started chanting, we want Moshe, Moshe, give us a shear, Moshe. Now, Yeshua is supposed to take over. And there are people, or hundreds of people, scrambling outside the study of Yeshua. Moshe, give us a shear, Moshe, teach us, Moshe, teach us. Luckily, a bat call came, a heavenly voice said, and said, Lindu me Yeshua. You want a shear? You learn from Yeshua. He's the Rav now. So they were the Kabbalah accepted, and Yeshua took over. Moshe sat on his right hand side, and the sons of Aaron sat on his left hand side, because that's the din, that the Godel is in the middle, the next person is on his right, and the next is on his left. So Moshe was on the right hand side of Yeshua, and Yeshua started teaching Torah. Can you imagine the scene there? There's the Talmud, there's Moshe, and Moshe's thrilled as anything. He's living! What does he care who's teaching the Torah? He's living! And Yeshua is getting nachas that his Talmud isn't teaching after all, and there he's got all the people in front of him, and his Talmud is taken over. Wonderful! After the shir, Moshe and Yeshua get up. Moshe's on the left of Yeshua, and they walk into the Oral Moed. That's a place which is very familiar to Moshe. They walk into the Oral Moed, and a cloud envelops Moshe, Yeshua. So Moshe waits. Yeshua has a chat with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He comes out. Moshe says, what did he tell you? Well, the new leader, what did he tell you? Yeshua says, Moshe, when you used to go in there, did I know what he told you? He says, none of your business. And Moshe breaks down and says, let me die. I would rather die 100 times than I should experience jealousy. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, that's what I wanted you to. I wanted you to reach the point where you wanted to die. Now we can get on with it. And I just want to read to you in conclusion the very final moments of Moshe's life. Yatzah bat kol, at that moment, a heavenly voice came out. Va'amra, and it said, Higia sof rega mitatcha. The end of the last moment before your death has arrived. Amra Moshe lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe has one last try, one last request. Ribbono Shel Olam, remember that day at the bush 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago, and you said, send me to Paro. Remember that time, I didn't want to go, I wanted to have nothing to do with it, I did it. Remember when I sat with you 40 days on the mountain, 40 days, 40 nights, didn't eat, didn't sleep, sat and learned Torah with you. Remember that, Ribbono Shel Olam. Bevakosha mincha, I have one further request. I'm ready to die. I can't take living under the present circumstances anymore. But al timasreini biyad malach hamavis. But don't let the malach hamavis do the job. Don't let the angel of death do it. That's all I ask of you. Yatza batko. So a heavenly voice came out, v'amra lo, and said to him, al titiare, don't worry. Ani ba'atzmi nekapo b'cha v'kvuratcha. I will do it myself. The Otasha, at that moment, Amad Moshe, Moshe got up for Kiddush Atzmo Kisrofi. And he sanctified himself like an angel. Got himself ready for the last moment. The Yorad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mishmei Shamayim HaElyon.
And the Ribbono Shel came down from the very highest of heavens, came right all the way down, Nitol Nishmato Shel Moshe, to take away the Neshama of Moshe. Ushloshe Malachi Hashores Imo, and three angels came with him, Michael, the Gavriel, the Zagzael. Those are the three angels that accompanied the Ribbono Shel. Look at the detail we're given of what happened. Michael Hitziya Mitato Shel Moshe. Michael made the bed for Moshe. Not to do this himself, there was an angel to make a bed for him. The Gavriel Paras Beged Al Butz Shel Butz Mirashotav. And Gavriel spread out some very nice material, I don't know exactly what butz is, cloth over his head. The Zagzal Miraglotav, and Zagzal was standing at his feet, and he spread it over his feet. Michael Mitzad Echad, the Gavriel Mitzad Echad. The Michael stood on one side, and Gavriel stood on one side. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Ribbono Shel Olam said to Moshe, Hashkev af hapeh enecha zeh al zeh, closed your two eyelids together. Hashkev af hapeh enav zeh al zeh, and he closed his eyelids. Amalei haniach yadecha al hachazeh, said to him, Moshe, put your hands on your chest, v'yaniach yadav al hachazeh, and he did so. Amalei hakef raglecha zeh al gav zeh, he said to him, bend your one leg over your other one, v'hekif raglecha zeh al gav zeh, and he did so. That moment the Ribbono Shel Olam called the Neshama, said, come back to me, Neshama. Amale, he said to the Neshama, he said to the soul, Biti, my daughter, Mea ve'esrim shana kitzveich haita begifo shel Moshe. Your 120 year limit in Moshe's body is now over. Achshav hegia katzech latzet. Now the time has come for you to leave his body. So Eve Al Tafi, quickly come out, don't waste another moment. So the Neshama starts arguing now. Moshe's lying with a sheet over him, ready to die. And his Neshama starts having an argument with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yadata nishata lekei kol haruchot. I know you're the God of all spirits, but I don't call him Neshama. Chayim v'ameitim misurim liyadcha. Living and dead are all in your hands. V'ata b'ratani, you created me. V'ata yitzartani, you formed me. V'ata yitzartani b'gufo shel Moshe. You put me in Moshe's body. Now there's from Shana, these 120 years, during which there was no bodily imperfection in him. Ani ohavo, I love him. Ve'eni rotze latzot mimenu. And I don't want to leave him. Achshav yesh guf tahor megufo shel Moshe. Do you want to tell me there's any better place to go than Moshe's body? Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ribbono Shel Olam, tzei, get out. Ve'al tachi, don't waste any more time. I am going to take you rather to the top of heaven, and I'll put you at the feet of my own throne. It's a Kruvim, the Srofim, the Gadurim, next to all the various angels. Again, she tries, the Neshama tries, the Otasha at that moment, Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, requested, V'natal mishmato b'neshikat peh, and he took the Moshe's neshama with a kiss, v'haya b'che, and then the Ribbono Shel Olam broke down after all this harshness and against Moshe's request, and he had to put up this hard front to get the neshama, to get Moshe to die. Now that he kisses Moshe and takes the neshama away, v'haya b'che, and his cry was mi yakum mi amrayim. Who's going to stand up for my people? Not only have I lost Moshe down in this world, but I've lost the person who, more than anybody else, enabled me to continue relating to my people.